Funding for Capital Report is provided by the following. The Able Trust, believing growth and productivity of Florida depends on a diverse and inclusive workforce. The Able Trust encourages all businesses to include talented Floridians with disabilities as vital staff members. More information is at abletrust.org. WFSU-FM Tallahassee. From the state capitol, Florida Public Radio brings you Capitol Report.
Could the incoming Trump administration actually be a money raiser for some of the very groups that oppose the president-elect?
Florida, you can see the effects of climate change just about everywhere, and it's not something hypothetical. It's not something to speculate about. It's happening here and now.
Also this week, after a number of difficult years, Florida's election head says the state's elections are back on track.
In 2016, we showed the state, the nation, and the world that Florida knows how to run elections.
We'll also learn how a big contract with a famous rapper could be the final straw for some lawmakers who don't like the way Florida promotes tourism nowadays. And we'll see how serious lawmakers may be about carrying out the medical marijuana amendment voters approved last month. I'm Tom Flanagan. Welcome to Capitol Report. President-elect Donald Trump is generating an environmental backlash as he puts together a cabinet dominated by fossil fuel interests. Jim Ash reports some of the nation's largest nonprofits are reporting a surge in web hits, newsletter subscriptions, and donations.
Even before President-elect Donald Trump named Rex Tillerson, Rick Perry, and Scott Pruitt for coveted cabinet posts, the men topped the environmental movement's 10 most wanted list. Now, some of the nation's biggest green groups are turning the ExxonMobil CEO, former Texas governor, and Oklahoma attorney general into poster children for one of the most successful environmental fundraising campaigns in modern history. In the past 4 weeks, donations to San Francisco-based Earth Justice are skyrocketing, says Vice President of Development Molly Fager.
In terms of major giving, and we would qualify that for our purposes, for gifts that are greater than $10,000 a year, we've seen about a 300% increase. And in the last 4 weeks, over $11 million raised.
In the past year, contributions have quadrupled, and the number of first-time online donors increased sevenfold, Fager says. That's significant because in the environmental movement, Earth Justice is the tip of the spear. Other environmental groups rely on Earth Justice's 120 attorneys when they head to court. Earth Justice is currently embroiled in more than 300 lawsuits and most noticeably represents the Standing Rock Sioux in its fight against the Dakota Access Pipeline. In Florida, Earth Justice is challenging the way the legislature spent millions of Amendment 1 dollars voters wanted for land conservation. Florida Managing Attorney Tanya Galone says the Sunshine State has much to lose from a Trump administration dominated by climate change skeptics and deniers.
In Florida, you can see the effects of climate change just about everywhere, and it's not something hypothetical. It's not something to speculate about. It's happening here and now. And the notion that we would be putting people at the highest level of government who don't even acknowledge that this is happening is really frightening.
Tillerson's ExxonMobil has been linked to a secret campaign to cloud public perception about climate change. The former Texas governor has strong ties to the oil industry and promised to eliminate the Department of Energy that Trump now wants him to head. The Oklahoma Attorney General is a climate change denier who has sued the Environmental Protection Agency, which he frequently accuses of overreach. Trump's controversial lineup is causing a surge in online newsletter subscriptions and webpage traffic, says Audubon of Florida Executive Director Eric Draper. Draper is especially concerned about a Pruitt-led EPA. Oklahoma's already being called the earthquake state because of the seismic activity resulting from widespread hydraulic fracturing, Draper says.
The person that's been the biggest champion of that fracking activity is now going to be head of the EPA. It really is outrageous. I think people are very, very concerned.
The Sierra Club registered 9,000 new monthly donors since Election Day, more than it logged in the previous 11 months combined. Sierra Club Florida lobbyist David Cullen says, in a sense, Trump is making it easier to sell the environmental message.
The election campaign is over, but you still have the base on either side and you have persuadables. And I think that it will probably make things easier to talk to persuadables, particularly given the fairly obvious implications of the cabinet selections.
The backlash is bleeding over into other progressive groups as well. The American Civil Liberties Union raked in $940,000 from 14,000 donors on November 9th alone, a record for the 94-year-old group. Meanwhile, Earth Justice is gearing up for a busy 4 years, Fager says.
This looks by far much worse than the Bush administration in terms of reasonableness and rationale around the environment. So we're preparing as much as we possibly can, financially and strategically, to be ready.
For Florida Public Radio, I'm Jim Ash.
On the heels of the 2016 presidential election, lawmakers are reviewing what went well while looking towards some changes. Regan McCarthy has more.
Florida has had a history of bumpy elections. The state's butterfly ballots and hanging chads remain in infamy. And as recently as 2012, Florida faced ridicule as its long lines threatened to disenfranchise voters and left final election results up in the air. But this year, Secretary of State Ken Detzner says, Florida turned things around.
In 2016, we showed the state, the nation, and the world that Florida knows how to run elections.
But that's not to say the 2016 elections went off without a hitch. Voting rights activists wanted the governor to give people more time to sign up to vote after a hurricane threatened the state, requiring an evacuation for some counties just days before the state's voter registration deadline. When the governor said no, groups like the League of Women Voters took their argument to court. Cecile Schoon is the president of the Bay County League.
We were very, very concerned with the governor's statement that everyone had enough time to register when he was the very one who was protecting lives and asking people to leave. We felt since it came out of his mouth to tell people to leave their homes and leave their businesses and the different offices, state offices where people could register were shut. It came from him. It should have come from him to allow people to have the extension to register.
A federal judge extended the state's voter registration deadline, but some activists say that wouldn't have been necessary if voters could have gone online to get signed up. The state is currently working on an online voter registration system. It's due to be completed in 2017. And during a presentation before the Senate Ethics and Elections Committee, Division of Elections Director Maria Matthews says the project is on track.
We are on schedule, I'm happy to say. We did have a little bit of hiatus with our meetings. Obviously, we're trying to do the election, but we have resumed that and we'll be continuing full steam ahead.
Meanwhile, some activists are pushing for what they say is another way to help: automatic voter registration. What that means is when somebody gets a driver's license, they'd be automatically registered to vote. Currently, people are given the option, but the process isn't automatic. Lake Worth Democratic Senator Jeff Clemens has filed a bill for the upcoming legislative session that would do just that. But state elections head Ken Detzner says that's a move that would require careful consideration.
I would want to have, again, a lot of conversation about the quality of the data, the quality of the process, and as I spoke a year and a half ago, the potential risk of fraud, duplication of registration, and quality data. This is a very precious commodity we have, is our voter registration database. I think we should make every effort to make it convenient for people to register and for people to vote. That is a huge step that I think requires a great deal of conversation.
But this isn't the first time Detzner has dragged his feet when it comes to voter registration advances. He came under fire from lawmakers previously for insisting an online voter registration system couldn't be completed by 2017. Legislators dismissed Detzner's concerns, passing legislation in the 2015 session requiring the system be up and running within 2 years. For Florida Public Radio, I'm Regan McCarthy.
Still to come on Capitol Report, when the Florida legislature tackles education issues in the upcoming session, we could be talking some very big hikes in education spending.
You're looking at a $400 million decision above and beyond anything that we have in a long-range financial outlook.
A $1 million contract with Mr. Worldwide could wind up shrinking the role of Florida's public-private tourism marketing corporation to the vanishing point.
It's a funny thing. No tourists came through 1996. Then in 1996, we formed this agency, and we started giving them money, and then we started getting tourists. Fascinating how that works.
Amendment 2 is raising tough questions about Florida's existing medical marijuana framework.
We should not be setting up state-supported cartels, and that's essentially what we've done.
And the push to make Florida's highway safer is truly a family effort as two lawmakers work together on the issue. Florida lawmakers could take up an education agenda that includes testing changes, mandatory recess, more money for teachers, and a greater focus on higher education. At least that last one is what the leaders in the Senate are thinking. Lynn Hatter reports on what the education discussions in advance of the 2017 session have been looking like thus far.
Senator David Simmons says teachers should not have to hold down second jobs.
It breaks my heart when I see teachers having to work in the evening just to, you know, to make ends meet, and we've got to improve teacher compensation.
The Altamont Springs Republican is chairing his chamber's K-12 Education Committee, and he says there could be some room to negotiate with the House on the widely despised teacher bonus program, Best and Brightest. And with a nod to the opt-out movement, Simmons is also planning to revive talks about how much testing in schools is too much.
We don't have to test all year long. We can test two times a year and with efficient testing. And so we're going to hear what the stakeholders have to say.
Education policy will extend from the classroom to the playground as local school districts try to get ahead of a renewed push for recess. A proposal to give elementary schoolers 100 minutes a week of free play failed last year, but it's back again through a new bill. The Orange County School District recently mandated recess for its elementary schoolers, and Leon County School Board member Roseanne Wood wants her district to do the same.
So I think I would like to put this forward as a policy that we could look at in the future and talk about.
Meanwhile, funding is a perennial issue as lawmakers face another tight budget year and the push for more money in higher education is on. Senate President Joe Negron wants to increase the top tier of Bright Future scholarships to cover 100% of tuition plus $300 book stipends. And he also wants to increase need-based aid for students and create a fund for university presidents to recruit faculty. All this while bringing the cost of going to school down through the use of block tuition.
I would love to see us have a more predictable guideline on how we charge for tuition, because it concerns me when I see students who are happy to take 15 hours, but they can't afford the difference in cost. So we're working in ways to resolve that.
And Negron has a new one: increasing the number of graduate degrees produced in the state to boost the prestige of Florida's public universities.
Particularly law, business, and medicine. And so I would expect that we would want to set aside some money specifically designed to make those schools even more prominent than they already are. And the good news is we have a lot of great law schools, medical schools, and business schools in Florida. But if you look around the country, I think when you have programs where you have elite graduate programs, that actually the benefit of that inures to the undergraduate students as well, and they get the benefit of that extra emphasis.
But all of these priorities come at a time when Florida's spending is outstripping its revenue. A big part of the budget uncertainty is whether Florida lawmakers will continue to subsidize what's known as the required local effort, or the local share of public school funding. State economist Amy Baker says that could be problematic.
If you decide to hold it flat, even reducing the number of students in the FTE forecast, you're looking at approximately a $400 million decision above and beyond anything that we have in a long-range financial outlook. So that, again, would worsen the projections we had put together.
House Speaker Richard Corcoran has expressed an interest in doing that by holding down property taxes. But after Baker's comments, Senate Appropriations Chairman Jack Latvala indicated those property tax revenues may have to go up if there is to be a significant increase in the education budget. For Florida Public Radio, I'm Lynn Hatter.
A fight over conservative principles in the Florida Capitol took an interesting turn this week, sweeping up the rapper Pitbull and even landing on the celebrity gossip site TMZ. The fight over economic development programs hints at the conflicts that could drive the upcoming session, as we hear from Kate Payne.
Florida legislators are making their voices heard on the issues of state tax incentives and private partnerships. New Speaker of the House Richard Corcoran is leading the charge against the state-funded tourism agency Visit Florida and economic developer Enterprise Florida. Corcoran is a free market idealist and believes government shouldn't pick winning and losing businesses by handing out tax dollars.
They're not consistent with our principles, and that's what we've talked about, that principles matter. And they also, the facts bear out that they really don't succeed.
This week, Corcoran took aim at a private contract between Visit Florida and the rapper Pitbull. The state hired Mr. 305 to promote Florida on social media, at concerts, and in his music video, Sexy Beaches. But until this week, just how much Visit Florida paid Pitbull was a trade secret. The idea that taxpayers weren't allowed to know how their money was spent drove Speaker Corcoran to sue. His complaints against the rapper even landed on the entertainment tabloid website TMZ. The tussle ended somewhat abruptly this week when Pitbull released the contract on Twitter. The grand total, $1 million. But some of Corcoran's criticisms still stand.
No, it's a funny thing. No tourists came through 1996. Then in 1996, we formed this agency and we started giving them money and then we started getting tourists. Fascinating how that works.
Corcoran has even threatened to gut the programs if his demands for transparency aren't met. Essentially, this feud is a proxy war between legislators and the governor. Visit Florida and Enterprise Florida are central to Rick Scott's jobs programs, the backbone of his administration. Attacking those programs sends a strong message. But Scott agrees Visit Florida should be more transparent and says the recent firing of two top executives demonstrates accountability. But Scott argues the agency plays an integral role in driving the economy.
So if we want to create an environment where we have the most jobs, the best jobs, where we can make sure we have the money to invest in education or law enforcement or the other things we care about, it's all going to be tied to how active we are in session.
Republican lawmaker Jack Latvala of Clearwater is a strong force in the Senate and the chamber's appropriations chair, and he's making a strong defense of the state's economic development programs.
I don't think we can stick our heads in the sand and just quit advertising and quit doing things to bring people to Florida, bring businesses to Florida, bring movies to Florida.
The Pitbull debacle is only the most recent state house conflict. Last session, the legislature rejected some of Scott's top budget priorities, including $250 million for Enterprise Florida. This week's clashes give an indication of what working relationships could be like in the upcoming session. But new Senate President Joe Negron says there are ways to navigate these conflicts.
If we'll just follow the simple rules, this has been done for a long, long time, long before I got here, long before Speaker Corcoran got here, there was a way to resolve conflict at the end, particularly on the budget. And it's worked very well.
Corcoran says he and President Negron have an understanding on how to balance the budget. But if anything is certain, it's that Corcoran is already rewriting the rules and building a chamber that matches his conservative principles. For Florida Public Radio, I'm Kate Payne.
Florida's Amendment 2 passed by an historic margin, but although the people have spoken, Nick Evans reports state and local leaders are far from certain about the path forward.
Florida's legislative session doesn't officially begin until March, but Senate committee hearings have already begun. And with 160 members in the House and Senate, finding compromise can take time. Next year, they'll take on a number of thorny issues, and the Senate's Health Policy Committee wasted no time addressing one of the most prickly. medical marijuana.
At this point, we are still in the educational phase with our members. This is a new subject for all of us, and so we are taking it very seriously, and we will implement Amendment 2 in an honorable way.
That's Committee Chair Dana Young, and the Tampa Republican is talking about the constitutional amendment paving the way for medical cannabis in Florida. But the issue isn't exactly new. Amendment 2 narrowly failed in 2014 before passing this year. And in each of the past three sessions, lawmakers have pushed cannabis legislation. Some of those measures are responsible for Florida's six licensed nurseries. Amendment 2 has shaken all of that up, and existing growers are quick to defend their place in the market. Kim Rivers, CEO of the dispensing organization Trulieve, says she and other licensees should retain their permits.
Finally, the new businesses that are brought online, we have worked extremely hard in the state of Florida, per your guidance, to make sure that, again, patient safety and product quality are paramount, and that anything going forward, that those standards would remain high and equal for all entrants into the market. And then, again, just to remind
Senator Jeff Brandis is a Republican from St. Petersburg with a bit of a libertarian streak. He's long advocated a legislative solution for medical marijuana, but his proposals have often been at odds with the rest of his caucus. He agrees with Rivers. Existing licenses should be honored. But now that Amendment 2 has passed, he says barriers to entry need to be lifted.
We should not be setting up state-supported cartels, and that's essentially what we've done. It's time to break down the barriers. It's time to let people make investments. But I won't support any bill that restricts the market.
A block away, the uncertainty has some on the Tallahassee City Commission spooked.
I don't want to get into the specifics on what we want to see in an ordinance, because I think we're wasting our time until we know what the state tells us what they're going to put in their laws.
That's Commissioner Scott Maddox at a recent meeting where city officials began the process for placing a six-month moratorium on new dispensaries within city limits. And Florida's capital city isn't alone. Small, relatively conservative towns like Milton and the Panhandle and large, progressive-leaning counties like Orange have approved freezes of their own. Although we voted to advance the proposal, Tallahassee Mayor Andrew Gillum is anxious about ceding authority to the state legislature.
We ought to define for ourselves what makes the most sense for Tallahassee, not for Miami or Orlando or Jacksonville, Panama City, but for our community. And it will take some time for us to figure that out, which is why I think this is a prudent next step. But I don't want to in any way communicate a ceding of ground for our own decision-making of what makes sense for our community to the legislature.
Even though Amendment 2 passed by a greater margin than any other state medical cannabis initiative in U.S. history, the issue remains contentious. Lawmakers, regulators, and growers seem to agree medical cannabis is here. But there are a lot of cooks in the kitchen with many different ideas about what they're making. For Florida Public Radio, I'm Nick Evans.
You're listening to Capitol Report from Florida Public Radio. I'm Tom Flanagan. Finally, this week, there's a bipartisan effort underway when it comes to driving legislation. As Sasha Cordner reports, those include enhancing texting while driving penalties and making sure Florida public school students stay on campus during lunch.
And I read in the sunset and all the doors that. And I thank God to this day that I was on that respirator, because I don't think I would have been able to breathe. I mean, that my whole life just changed with that news.
That's Emily Slausberg recalling how she felt when she found out her twin sister and best friend Dory had died as a result of a 1996 car crash involving both sisters. When Slausberg was just a teenager, she, her sister, and five other friends agreed to go to a party after they were invited by a guy at a bowling alley. So all seven of them piled into the back seat of a two-door Honda Civic.
The driver puts his seatbelt on. His friend up front puts his seatbelt on. So we're in the car, we're stuffed in the car, and he starts driving down Palmetto Park Road. And the driver starts weaving in and out of traffic. He just starts speeding. And I'll never forget, we almost get into an accident because he almost hit the car in front of us. And instead of slowing down, he starts speeding up faster. And we all look at each other in the car. I looked into my twin sister's eyes, and she looked scared. But for some reason, nobody said anything.
But she says within seconds, the speeding car bounced across a median and plowed head-on into another car.
All seven of us in the backseat fly out of the car. The driver and his friend who were wearing their seatbelts, they stay in the car. The car we hit, there's three ladies in the car. They were all wearing their seatbelts. They were okay. As a result, out of the seven of us from the back seat, five are dead, including my twin sister Dory. I survive, and another girl survives. She's a quadriplegic who can only move her right arm, and she still breathes on a respirator.
And Slaughsburg says she'll never forget waking up in a hospital bed.
My bone was out of my leg. My ribs were punctured in my lung. I had this tube coming out of here. My tongue was half off. I was on a respirator. I couldn't breathe on my own. I felt like my head was on a machine. Like I had trees growing out of my hair. And all I can think about, the pain, the physical pain was nothing. But I'll never forget, like, my visitors. I see all my family. I see my dad. I see my mom. But I don't see Dory.
And that accident changed her family forever. Her father, former Democratic Representative Irv Slaughsburg, decided to run for office and has continually fought for enhancements to Florida's driving laws. That includes a 2009 law partly named after his daughter Dory, requiring all Florida drivers wear a safety belt. And together with his surviving daughter Emily, created the Dory Slaughsburg Foundation, where Emily is a CEO and talks about her story, encouraging traffic safety efforts. At age 35, Emily is now following in her father's footsteps as the newly elected representative for District 91 in the South Florida area. One of the first bills she filed enhances penalties for people who text and drive while in a school zone or crossing. She's also filing a similar bill, making it a primary offense for juveniles to text while driving. And having gotten into an accident after texting while driving himself, Hialeah Republican Renee Garcia is sponsoring the Senate version of that bill.
Those are issues that are very important to her, and I'd be more than happy to help her and push those issues here in the Senate.
He and Slaughsburg are also sponsoring the Mayra Capote Act, mandating Florida students remain on school grounds during the lunch hours. The only exception is those who obtain parental consent.
That comes as a result of a mother in my district, Mayra Capote, whose daughter some time ago died as a result of leaving campus for lunch. And she has been on a mission to try to close school lunches across the state. She was successful in Miami-Dade County, where they're no longer open. And she wants to ensure that that accident doesn't happen to any student in the state of Florida.
But he says the legislation could encounter some trouble.
It's an uphill battle, because I understand that there's issues with our rural communities not having the adequate lunch access in their schools. But I will continue to fight and be her advocate up here in Tallahassee.
Both their bills, if they ever became law, would take effect July 1st of next year. For Florida Public Radio, I'm Sasha Kortner.
Our regular Capitol Report correspondents are Jim Ash, Sasha Kortner, Nick Evans, Lynn Hatter, Regan McCarthy, and Kate Payne. We also thank our contributing Florida Public Radio stations. Technical assistance for Capitol Report is provided by Taylor Cox, and I'm Tom Flanagan. Follow us on Twitter at FPR Cap Report, and please join us again next week for more reports from the state capitol.
Audio copies of Capitol Report are available by calling 1-800-829-8809. You can also hear Capitol Report online, including archives of past shows, at fprn.org. Funding for Capitol Report is provided by the following. The Able Trust. 25 years of connecting businesses with workers with disabilities. Businesses are encouraged to interview and hire talented and loyal Floridians with disabilities as they seek to broaden their customer base and reach all of Florida's diverse population. Abletrust.org. WFSU-FM Tallahassee. This is Florida Public Radio.